Thank you very much, Lynn, and Mary Oakham is gone. The phrase that stuck in my mind, one of the phrases that stuck in my mind from Mary Oakham's brief introduction was the notion of scholars parking their egos at the door. And you're making that very difficult for me, Lynn. But I also have to say a few words in regard to that, because of the SFU-UBC history of a slight rivalry, a slight intellectual rivalry. And so I need to put in a word or two, although Mary was very fair, I thought, in terms of this balanced representation of the two universities. But there is another institution in this town, and that rivalry has always been part of my academic career until Brian Owen, in fact. Where's Brian? Until Brian Owen made the switch to SFU as an associate librarian and came forward with the idea that we might work together. SFU has done work on open source software development long before I had the idea, and had been working with libraries on a kind of community service basis. And so we sat down and we formed what turned out to be an entirely, well, I'll be frank with you, illegal agreement. We formed a memorandum of understanding between the two institutions on a basis of trust, contribution, sharing, a kind of wealth of knowledge, only to be told 1 year later when we were about to raise our glasses to celebrate that it was an entirely, I do recall this, and perhaps this does reflect on UBC because it did come forward from UBC's legal counsel that it was an illegal agreement. I thought immediately it was illegal because of the cooperation, the sharing of knowledge, the openness of exchange. But I felt that, at least I learned very quickly, that that was not the case. It was illegal because I had signed the agreement. I had signed the agreement on behalf of an institution known as the University of British Columbia. And I had assumed that I had somehow the authority or the position or the chutzpah, we might say, to sign on behalf of the University of British Columbia. So as soon as I acknowledge that, in fact, no, I am not, and there is no resemblance, the University of British Columbia is beautifully located on a lovely tract of land with gorgeous trees overlooking the ocean. There's no resemblance. And that any kind of a pretension on my part, or any kind of presumption on my part, on representing the university was not my intent at all. The university then said, that's fine, but we want the intellectual property. That the university itself has a new interest, that the new economy of the institution today is all about this kind of claim on intellectual property. And fortunately, the Office of Technology Transfer at the University of British Columbia, which about 7 years before, after a long conversation with me, had declared that I, in fact, had no intellectual property of interest to the University of British Columbia. I made the person who interviewed me swear never to tell my dean that I had no intellectual property of any value to the University of British Columbia. Subsequently, that same office, though, saved, as it were, as a vegetarian and a Jew, saved our bacon. The Department of Technology Transfer at the University of British Columbia declared that if a professor has no intent to commercialize, if the professor has, in fact, a desire to see the software, the intellectual product, the work that they do, made public as part of an open source community in this case, that the university was prepared to respect that. That there was still within the university a kind of first principle. And for me, that was a refreshing element. And if there's any other defense I need to present, any other kind of introduction to the University of British Columbia? Don't forget the trees and the beach. Did I mention that? Indeed, Mario hasn't mentioned the beach yet, at least in his talk. That to me is the starting point. But let me do a few more introductory remarks because it is such a neat place. I mean, come on, people. I mean, I feel like recognizing the delegate from McGill University, formerly of Tennessee. So this is a wonderful place. I don't really know if it is a place for dialogue. I have to be frank with you. I have to be honest with you. I am not sure if you have to raise your hand, then push a button, wait for the red light to come on, and then keep making sure that there are not two other microphones or red lights on anywhere else in the room, whether that is the most conducive. But it is such a neat room. And I don't know quite know where to stand, and I don't think it is a podium. I was going to work a room like Donahue. Someone came up to me and he said, are you going to be all over the place like Sting? Kind of a generational thing, although I thought Sting was my generation. So I will try to work the room a bit. And I want to work it around a number of themes. I know this conference is not necessarily about the public knowledge project, but it is entirely in the spirit of which this project began. And this is also kind of unusual for me because I don't know if you've noticed, I certainly noticed, that one of the things we didn't take care of, and people here at SFU, and I do owe a huge debt, the organizing committee and the names that you heard, and I appreciate you reading them to the group because they are important people in this process, and this is about, for me at least, among the best organized conferences I have ever been to, and that's allowing for snow in Argentina, in Buenos Aires for the first time in 80 years, and layovers in Montreal, and people visiting the London airport for longer than they ever planned to or intended to. But among all of them, it has been superbly organized. The one thing we forgot to do, one thing I forgot to do, was to give a title for the keynote. But that fact, you notice there isn't a title for the keynote. And I'm kind of naked without a title, and I feel badly for not having a title, and I'm going to offer it a title. Because this is about the public knowledge project, and if there's one thing this has allowed me to do, it is reflect on the history of this project. I'm not quite working the room yet, am I? To reflect on the history of this project. And so I would choose, and again, this is slightly in light of tomorrow night's entertainment, which no one has actually made a plug for yet, but I will. So the Public Knowledge Project essentially started 10 years ago, in 1997. And again, what is this history on these dates? I would like to go back actually to about 1966 for a moment or two. So 10 years ago, the Public Knowledge Project came forward as an idea. And it came forward as an idea of the notion of a project, not a center, not an institute, not a building, not a converted Woodward, so I think that sounds like a marvelous project, but a project, a kind of temporary thing, something that we could focus on and get done. We could look at scholarly publishing and the failure to have a global knowledge exchange that's at the very intent of scholarly publishing, and we could treat that as a project, and then we could say, time for something else. I can go back to my work in literature, and literacy. And I could look again at Shakespeare and Romeo and Juliet and the influence of feminist literary theory on those kinds of things because my project would be done. I was a little naive. I didn't think it would be 10 years that we would still be working on it. But at least it gives me the advantage of having a title like 10 years after. Okay, there's only a few of you in the room that will appreciate the Alvin Lee-ness of 10 years after. We'll remember the scene in the Woodstock movie when the watermelon rolls onto the stage after 10 years after his performance. 10 years ago, I had the pleasure of going to Seattle University for a year to be the Boeing chair. And again, I parked my ego at the door, so I don't say that with any pride at all. I can in fact say with disappointment because the Boeing chair at Seattle University, it's just the most ordinary little stool. You can't plug in. There's no TV on the back of the chair in front of you. The service is not so bad. I mean, there's virtually none. I mean, the fortunate part is there aren't six people sitting beside you in the Boeing chair. Seattle University is a Jesuit university. And so there was a lovely kind of opportunity there to return to one of the scholarly academic traditions of the West and the Jesuit education. And at the same time, have the ability with the Boeing chair, as it were, to fly wherever I wanted. Actually, I couldn't fly anywhere, but to fly in an imaginative sense. But it was an unusual kind of position insofar as they said, come down for a year and do whatever you want. We don't care what you did before. Just come down for a year to Seattle. It wasn't that far. It's still raining. I had the same, you know, they asked about the Gore-Tex. I had a complete set of Gore-Tex, which was probably what qualified me to teach there. And I had the opportunity then to think for a year about something I hadn't thought about. But of course it was always, and it ended up to be things that I had thought about. So 10 years ago I had thought about things that were changing in terms of the technology that Mario referred to. 10 years ago, the internet, of course, was with us, it had begun. Many of us had at least started to send emails in 1997 or 98. Many of us didn't start sending many emails. But at that point, I thought that there was a chance to do something around publishing. Now, my own background in publishing, I have to be clear about this, because actually I'm a professor of education. If I explain to people on a bus what I'm doing, I say that I teach teachers. And I do. My day job is to teach teachers, and in particular teach teachers about language and literacy and literature, composition and writing, vocabulary, and the whole range of activities that we do with language. And out of all those activities, underneath all of that, is the history of publishing. And so that some years before, when I went to get my doctorate, this is a little bit of personal history here, when I went to get my doctorate, as a school teacher, I won a Teachers Federation Scholarship, went to get my doctorate, I came back